American Onslaught Radio.
This is American Onslaught Radio. We've got our finger on the beast's pulse right now. An America sunk deep in debt, addiction, and immaturity. But fortunately, the time is at hand for a change. Our objective, to create a viable alternative means of defeating the idea of globalism, which began at the Tower of Babel. Right now, we've got the machine to take down this system, and it's all gassed and hot-wired, ready to go. Living as we do in a pre-apocalyptic society, it behooves us to remember that fortunes, like mushrooms, grow best in the dark, an old Rothschild family saying that we might well take to heart. To every intellectual and elitist in our society, the idea that we live in a global village, as Marshall McLuhan called it, seems perfectly natural. And according to their logic, we might as well live in a Tower of Babel, a ziggurat that stretches to the sky, all speaking the same language, governed by the same priests and technicians. Today, the opponents of this pernicious internationalism are oppressed by the insipid intellectuality of these globalist elites, because they suffer from a dearth of ideas and a lack of erudition and ability to express themselves. It's not possible to create a renaissance, but that's what we're looking for in this totalitarian wasteland. We're all political alchemists, attempting to develop a formula that will lead to an autonomous society, in which there will be a resurgence of organic art, theater, music, architecture, horticulture, and technology. And therefore, we begin our study by acknowledging a few realities. We don't deal with palliatives and alternatives. This is about practical politics and scholarship. Talking about practical politics, what are practical politics? These are non-voting politics devoid of rules, which makes them eminently practical. How can you become proactive within your local voting precincts and wards? Well, elections don't make a difference. Anyone running for Congress is a wolf in sheep's clothing or an idealistic dupe. Only two creatures in this world have the ability to turn on a dime and give you 6 cents change: a quarter horses and politicians. Only difference is, politicians keep the change. What is practical scholarship? The realization that cultural hegemony always trumps political hegemony. We don't need to go into Gramscian theory or discuss the long march through the institutions by the high priests of Tavistock. History is one thing our side is most familiar with. Unfortunately, history is merely an extended chronicle of defeat and decline. There's no reason to rehash it or obsess over it. We learn from history, put its practical lessons to use, and move on. Forever forward. Therefore, we cultivate learning and erudition in order to develop a consistent message, and our lifestyle is the battleground. Our aim is to regain cultural hegemony for all peoples. Political hegemony can be gained and lost again, but cultural identity is rooted and grounded, unique to nations and peoples, and the source of political strength. Identity is necessary to autonomy, and self-reliance is the basis of a free society. Lastly, we recognize that education is an act of aggression. For too long, we as a people have been mesmerized into submitting our property, our children, and our very souls to those who seek to destroy mankind to create their new world order. These are people who cohere the moral mind into a trance of guilt and assume that we owe some debt to those who have led us down the primrose path of spiritual compromise and social demise. But it hasn't worked. The New World Order died on 9/11, and it's every dog for himself now. If you're under 40, this is the broadcast that is going to change your life. Conditions are ripe for a storm, and we're laying out the copper and sulfur on the path of cinnabar. And as for me, your host, who am I? Some call me Paul, some call me Breck, others call me things that we won't go into right now. I'm a constant pilgrim, sometime poet, and I'll be your companion on this journey. American Onslaught Radio, I'm Breck Elkins. I'm joined by my co-host, Joseph Dantes, blogger, Christian PUA, reactionary, and self-experimenting researcher. Good evening, Joseph.
How you doing?
Pretty good. we're going to deal with a array of subjects, I believe, in the time we have, and you'd sent me a quite interesting link that I've been reading over the whole weekend on UFO phenomena and the Bible, and I found it very fascinating from a variety of perspectives, so would you like to go into that a bit, for starters?
Okay, yeah, sure. So, yeah, I found it fascinating, too, and the guy is... His name is Guy Malone, and I came across him via Ben Settle, who's a Christian email marketer. He just came out with a PDF called Christian Business Secrets, so kudos to him for having the balls to talk about something like that. And I definitely recommend that PDF. It's free. But anyway, Guy is a... Christian now, but he wasn't growing up, and he used to be visited by aliens as a child. So basically what he says is the UFO movement is huge, and it displays, I've noticed, I'm sure everyone's noticed, it displays deep connections with the New Age movement, and there's also a disturbing unity of graphical representations and themes. In other words, they all kind of look the same. So he teaches that they're not extraterrestrial, but they're interdimensional, and they're in fact demonic. A continuation of the medieval fairy people tradition of demonic contact with humans. So he believes that their increasing activities are part of a plan aimed at the end times to promote a new age one world government. And in today's age of nuclear mutually assured destruction, alien contact is one of the few scenarios besides economic or environmental crisis that could credibly lead to one world government. So Guy's argument is very convincing. The Bible says you can know them by their fruit, and the fruit of these alien encounters and movement is always New Age religiosity, and the encounters themselves are often forced and of a tormenting nature. So he believes that the second coming, or that the strong delusion talked about in Revelation with the UFOs is going to be a UFO deal where there's going to be alliance between the global UFO religious movement, which will be evidenced by mass UFO appearances, and that this will work together to bring about a one world government.
It's quite significant. You know, right now we've talked about Roswell many times, and these aliens that supposedly, or these figurines that have landed, you know?
Yeah, right. He's saying that they're interdimensional, so...
That way by... By going through time, you know, so fast, dimensional, various deals. But what's going on is, like you say, and like this guy writes, is that... We're being basically set up for the Antichrist in a form. We're basically seeing his forerunners, as it were, just as John the Baptist came before Jesus to make straight the way of the Lord, as he said. You know, we've got this deal here where we have this new one-world religion, and then we're going to see a one-world ruler arising. I mean, it's got to happen. There's got to be one person. It's not going to be a universal government by committee, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. These UFOs are one manifestation of, you know, the powers and principalities that we fight. There's a couple of behaviors he notes that they exhibit. First of all, just demonic in general can have area of effect, or just localized zones of influence, which can be broken by Christian prayer, and probably people who are involved in evangelical Christian circles may have seen evidence of things like that happening. And then also there can be generational affiliations, which is what Guy Malone had, where his family had a history of contact, or connection with this kind of thing, so he believes it was transmitted perhaps from father to son.
Mm-hmm. Or that some people would be natural mediums of, you know, contacting these beings. Some people would be more prone to contact with these people or these aliens or demons or whatever due to certain characteristics that they possess.
Right, like drug use or involvement in the occult or other things can open you up to that sort of thing. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just wanted to maybe list off some of the extinction level threats that we're currently facing. The first is something that Texas Arcane at the blog Vault Co. talks about a lot. He talks about the solar cycle, which drives climate change, namely ice ages, which obviously destroys our ability for agricultural production. And also simultaneously, the beginning of these solar minimum cycles, one of which is scheduled for 2012, are correlated with supervolcanism, which obviously can blot out the sun and pump huge amounts of poison into the atmosphere. And also, when you have these this ice age and supervolcanism, then you get global resource conflict between the superpower nations, which can lead to nuclear war if it gets serious enough. So that's what he calls the apocalypse trifecta. And then there's also what we just mentioned, demonic machinations toward one world government and new age religion. And then, of course, there's the singularity of artificial intelligence, which is scheduled to happen maybe by 2050 or 2070. So we have a couple of major threats on our radar, as well as the debt collapse of the United States, which is predicted to happen in 2033 by Vox Dei, who's accurately predicted a number of economic developments with this economic crisis.
Yeah, with amazing prescience. And so we're coming into a storm here, and you know, a lot of people say batten down in case of a storm. You know, just as soon create a machine that will help you ride above that storm, or if you're on a ship, for example, at sea, you set sail and let that storm blow you into something better than where you are now. So this is what American Onslaught Radio is directed toward. Improving your lifestyle, improving our ability to be self-reliant, and navigate these treacherous times in which we're living. Joseph, one of your greatest areas of expertise, it seems to me at least, is that your diet research, and it's quite extraordinary to me because I've had similar difficulties personally, and your research has been actually a great help to me, so I'm on a carnivorous diet at the moment.
Awesome.
So would you like to kind of talk a bit about that, particularly toward individuals who are suffering from poisoning in this society, in the Western society?
Sure.
By what they...
Absolutely, yeah. We just talked about extinction-level threats, and there are also less lethal threats that we face. And one of the main ones, I think, in that category is the slow poisoning of diseases of civilization due to modern diet that basically is affecting pretty much everyone in rich, developed countries. And I think this explains a lot of where the culture has gone and where political freedom has gone. I think it's one of the major explanatory factors in last 100 or 200 years of history since we've started heavily consuming sugar and then moving towards all processed food diets. These are not healthy ways to eat, and they are slowly poisoning everyone, which reduces our intelligence, reduces our psychological strength and stability, reduces energy levels, demasculinizes us and defeminizes the women, leads to all kinds of diseases of civilization, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, degenerative diseases in the elderly, etc. So I had a very bad variant of all that. It involved IBS, which is basically like dysentery, and then chronic fatigue, major psychological problems, including depression, bipolarism, and something like autism, where my emotions were very flattened and dead. And all of this was due to gluten intolerance, which is found in wheat, and sugar intolerance, and just not being able to eat processed food and handle it well. So I started experimenting with my diet quite heavily after realizing that my diet was the source of all these problems, which was initially not clear at all. I just thought I had a bunch of problems and was living a miserable life. But diet was the cause, and after extensive self-experimentation and tracking, I isolated down and until I was only eating meat. And basically the formula is just eat meat with sufficient fat, but not too much. And so that is the optimal diet for us. If you believe in the evolutionary theory of human development, whether you do or not, the metaphor holds. I mean, you can just look at comparative biology with us between apes. We're not really evolved or designed to digest large amounts of plant matter. We're designed with a carnivorous intestinal system. And so meat is something that everyone can eat and digest, and meat is the optimal food for us. So if you're eating meat with sufficient fat in it, but not too much, that is the optimal diet that will clear you of all those diseases of civilization and begin to cure you.
Well, you know, in our kind of, we like to decry our fast food driven lifestyle, you know, but people really are in such a rush these days, they don't really have a choice but to, you know, eat a diet high in wheat content. So what we have in many cases I've seen is that people just don't have time to cook and eat meat, and this is you know, it requires a lifestyle change more than just deciding you're going to live on this diet. You know, you've got to take the time to actually you know, put your own effort into it. And can you talk a little bit about that and how you were able to develop this diet that worked on a time basis for you?
I mean, yeah, as far as time, I would say that the first most important realization is that diet is the foundation of your life. And I do mean your life. Every single second that you're awake and conscious, your things that you regard as willpower and issues or moral issues are heavily determined by what your biological inputs are. So the amount of energy and time that you have in your day is directly dependent on your diet. So it's a false economy to think that I can save time by not eating correctly. The opposite is true. But that said, I'm the world's laziest chef. So I definitely have, you know, a very time efficient way of cooking. And I think it's really easy. I mean, if you wanted to, you could cook once per day or once every 2 days. Just cook a bunch of meat, stick it in the refrigerator, and be done with it. I mean, I only cook with a pan and a spatula. Ground meat is exceptionally easy to cook, or just cut up meat into strips, you know, a solid cut of whatever, pork, and then fry it quickly at high heat, and then you're done. I don't use any oil or anything like that. No salt, no pepper, nothing. And then just, you know, sock it in the refrigerator if necessary. I prefer to eat hot, but it really doesn't take much time, and it returns a huge amount of energy and conscientiousness and moral willpower. So it's the best investment you can possibly make.
And on kind of finishing up on that subject, can you just talk a little bit about the types of meat? You've talked about fish and beef in particular, that are of particular help in boosting your energy and improving you on this diet.
Yeah, as far as meat, once you're eating all meat, you're mostly all the way there. There are a couple of problems you can watch out for. I mean, don't eat a bunch of carbon that builds up in the pan. That made me sick. Don't eat too much fat. The paleo diet movement loves to talk about fat, but if you eat too much of it, that's a natural laxative and it will, you know, give you problems. So you do need fat. If you only eat too much protein, if you're only eating lean meat, then you will encounter basically a starvation scenario. So you do need to eat some fat, but just pay attention to what your body is telling you. If the fat tastes delicious and hits you in the hindbrain like a hit of opiates, then that means that you're a little bit low on fat. If the fat begins to make you slightly nauseous, just a tiny tinge, that means you're eating way too much fat. So keep it in a very reasonable range, maybe 10% or 5% visible fat is reasonable. Mainly eat around the fat. And then as far as types of meat, you know, beef will increase your testosterone, and that's good. You can eat a variety of meat just for enjoyment. I recommend fish because it's got a good omega balance. But what you really want to look at if you've got the cash is to go for grass-fed beef and wild-caught fish instead of the farmed varieties of meats and fish, because there's a huge difference in the composition and quality of that meat. And it's really unnatural the way we grow our meat. They're stuffed on grain, and it looks different, it smells different, and it's vastly superior in nutritional quality if you can get the grass-fed livestock and the wild-caught fish.
And that's one thing we do have in Missouri as far as grass-fed beef. But anyway, moving on, I want to kind of cover in the 5 minutes we have left. I think in every show we talk about solutions, and diet is a big part of changing your life and developing your personal sovereignty.
This is like the recommended self-improvement critical path in order of priority. I mean, first of all, if you watch the show Survivor, you need water first and then shelter after that. That's two gimmies. Almost everyone has that. Then after that, diet is the most important thing. Find your max health point by going to the, you know, all meat diet, because you don't know what healthy feels like. I didn't until I did that. Then good sleep, and you can go polyphasic if you want. Then I recommend Sabbath, rest, prayer, fasting if you're religious. Then I recommend cigarettes, Tomcat Alley, and Cordyceps, which is controversial, the cigarettes part. Then fix your psychological issues if you have any. Then game, PUA, which we'll be talking about a lot afterwards. Then set up a minimal income stream, preferably entrepreneurial, with looking at gurus like Ramit Sethi, Tim Ferriss, etc. Then eliminate all your debt. Then get off the grid. Read J.J. Luna's How to Disappear. Leave the U.S. because it's going to crash and go totalitarian and fascist. Then build up savings in metals like gold and silver, and invest in small businesses that provide real value that can sustain an economic crash. And then build a vault capable of sustaining life under a cobalt shroud of nuclear fallout for 2+ years, which you can learn by reading Vault Co. by Texas Arcane.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me as a beginning. I would like to have Texas on the broadcast sometime to talk about that nuclear vault, because I'm only half done with my bunker, you know, so it's just a hole in the ground right now. So I've got a ways to go. Wow. But anyway, my co-host Joseph Dantes blogs at josephdantes.com/blog/shorts. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah. Or you can just find me, Joseph Dantes, with an S.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to Google you there. So I appreciate you doing this demo here. I'm going to send it off tomorrow. Just edit it up and send it off, and we'll see what happens.
Awesome, man. Thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. Same here. You have a good evening.
All right. Take care, Breck. Later.
Bye.